You are listening to an Emmanuel Community Church podcast. For more sermons or information about the church, visit our website at www.emmanuelcommunity.org.
Some months ago, back in the early summer, we went out to dinner with a couple of couples from Emmanuel and just had a nice evening. One of those times that you never mean to stay that long. But we were talking and we were laughing, and our server was so gracious. She came and she'd refill our drinks very quietly, and then she'd come and clean up our plates, and everything she did was kind of without disturbing us, very, very gracious. She eventually brought our bill, and I know we never say this, but I looked at the bill and I thought, wow, that I thought it'd be a lot more than that. And at the same time, my wife leaned over and said, give her a good tip. And I said, okay. So I kind of thought, what was I planning on paying? And so I ended up giving her a good tip, probably 50% or more of the bill. But it was a big tip. And I was happy to do it because we should have paid rent on the table anyway because we stayed so long. So eventually we got up and left and walked out and said our goodbyes to each other and walked out to the car. And as I got to my car door, I turned and here came our server kind of jogging toward me. And I thought, oh, I forgot my credit card or my glasses or something. I always do. And she got to me and she threw her arms around me and she hugged me. And she said, thank you so much. You don't know what this means to me. Now, honestly, it caught me off guard a bit because it'd been quite a while since we paid and I'd forgotten. And it paused a minute and I said, oh, you're welcome. You deserve it. You did a great job this evening. Thank you. She stuck her head inside our car and said to my wife, thank you so much. And then she skipped back to the restaurant. Nothing really changed except a little bit in me. It made the evening so special. And all the way home, I kept thinking, you know, I don't say thank you well enough. Some months ago, Pastor Josh called me and said, would you be interested in just preaching a Thanksgiving sermon? You can pick any text you want. And I said, I know what text. Because I've been thinking about my own need. And preparing this sermon has been so helpful to me, and my prayer is that it will be a challenge for you as well. So take your Bibles, turn with me to Luke chapter 17. If you like following along with sermon notes, you can take them and fill in the blanks, or you can go to your church app and download the already filled in sermon notes. Either way, it's always, I think, helpful to follow along as you can. Now, a couple things I'll share with you. First of all, last week we finished the Galatians series. Don't worry, it's not over after chapter 2. It picks up again in January. And as Pastor Jay said, next week we start a Christmas. Pastor Josh starts a Christmas series called The Promised Child. It's always one of my favorite times of year to preach, and I'm sure it's very special to you all as well. Now, today, we're in between series, so it's a standalone. And when Pastor Josh asked me to preach, as I said, I knew what it would be. And I'm just so thankful to him for asking me to participate like this. It's a joy for me, and hopefully it's a little bit of a break for him before he begins a very intense Advent season. Now, a couple other things. Number one is we are, as a church, are connected with Inasmuch Ministries, and we're going to talk about a collection drive at the end of the service. Just want to give you a heads up. And lastly, one of the things that I continue to do for the church is to lead trips. I lead two or three trips a year, educational trips, for us to learn a little bit more about our faith. The last couple of years, we've gone to Turkey because it's been difficult to go to Israel, as you understand. And we found Turkey to be the other Holy Land, one of our favorite places. I have two spots open for March. If anybody has any interest, just see me after the service or email me. You can see the dates there. It has been a delight to get to know this country and to learn about all the things that happen in Scripture there. Now, I'd like to read to you today's text, and then we're going to come back and take it piece by piece to walk our way through it. Follow along as I read or just listen. On the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee, and as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And my favorite line, "And as they went, they were cleansed." Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now, he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to them, and he said to him, the leper, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Now, anytime I preach a sermon, you probably know, I do a lot of background research. I want to know the context because I want to be accurate in what I give to you. And I want you to have a good understanding. I usually don't provide this much context, but I thought in this case, with this story, it's not part of a series, so maybe it would be helpful to have more context. So let me try to do this quickly. First of all, the timing of this story, this account with the 10 lepers. Luke says it's on the way to Jerusalem. But you see, we can know much more about that. For instance, this is in the very last months, in fact, last weeks of Jesus' life. This is his last trip ever to Jerusalem. Let me take you back. The Gospel of John gives us more detail in this particular time. And we learned that Jesus was in Jerusalem a few months earlier. That would have been in October. For a feast, a holiday called the Feast of Tabernacles. You can read all about it in John chapter 7 and 8. Then he goes back to Jerusalem a few months after that. It's the Feast of Dedication. Now, you and I call this Hanukkah. Almost always happens around our Christmas. So you'll see on TV commercials, or they'll say Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah or something. This was the feast he went to Jerusalem for when, if you remember, as he was leaving Jerusalem, he healed, brought back from the dead, a man by the name of Lazarus. Now, this is his third trip. This is now March. Because we know it's the feast of Passover. Jesus died on the day of preparation of Passover. So he goes back one more time. When did he start this trip to Jerusalem? All the way back in Luke 9. When the days drew near for him to be taken up, go to heaven, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. Why did he set his face? Nobody wants to go to die. Neither did Jesus. He knew he needed to. He had to. But he set his face, and this story happens on his way one last time. By the way, often we look at calendars more like this, so I'll just show it to you this way. In October, he went to Jerusalem for a Feast of Tabernacles. In December, he goes for Hanukkah, and then he is now somewhere in here, and he will end up at the Feast of Passover and on the cross. Now, the location of the story, Luke gives us a little detail. He says, between Samaria and Galilee. John tells us that during this period of time, Jesus spent some time, we don't know how much, in a village called Ephraim. Right there you see it. Now, before, I know you're opening your notes. Before you do that, flip them to the back. Because on the back, you have a map. And on the map, you can kind of identify these sites. It's important to know these. So I'm going to zoom in a little better. And you can see that Ephraim is right there, right above Jerusalem, north and east. And then I'm going to circle Jerusalem too. And just so you know, so you have a context again, 13 miles from one to the other, 13 miles. Now, before we say that's the place, because we don't know for sure. We know he spent time in Ephraim, but we don't know where this miracle happened. And Luke actually says between Samaria and Galilee. So some people believe it happened up there where that star is. Some of you, many of you have been to Israel with me. And if you remember going to Beit Shan, Beit Shan is this area. And so it either happened up there where the star is or down closer to Jerusalem. We don't know for sure, but there or somewhere between. That's important later. Now, I want you to know that in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus did 26 recorded miracles. Now, he did a lot more, but 26 recorded miracles. And I know that if you look this up, someone else will say 23 and someone else will say 29. It's hard to count them, but that's about my count, 26. And on his way to Jerusalem on this particular trip, starting in Luke 9:51, he did 5 miracles. The reason I tell you that is because this is incredible mercy. For him to be going to the cross to die and to stop and do miracles for other people is pretty gracious, pretty merciful. I gave you a list in your notes of the 5. These are the 5 that he does on his last trip, on the way to Jerusalem. We are looking at the 4th one here, the 10 lepers. The next one, you know, it's you get to it in the next few chapters of Luke with the story of Zacchaeus. Now, I also need to tell you about leprosy because we don't talk about it much anymore. Leprosy was actually healed in most Western countries in 1982. It was wiped out. So we don't see it today. But in Jesus' day, it was very common. Leprosy starts with white patches. It can be on your face. It can be on your hands, your arms. But these white patches. Now, a white patch doesn't mean you have leprosy. It could be from another cause. But if you get a white patch, you have to get away from other people because it could be leprosy. If it is leprosy, what happens is it will become a sore. That white patch will begin seeping, and it'll become a sore, and it'll spread, and white patches will appear all over your body. From there, you will lose feeling. Feelings in your fingers, all your extremities. And so because you lose feelings, you burn your fingers, you break your fingers, you actually rub them off. So people who have leprosy often have no fingers or few fingers left. Nose often gone, ears, toes. It's common. Then tumors begin to develop. Then some reason it sometimes hits the eyes and can cause blindness. Almost always hits the larynx. And people with leprosy end up having a raspy voice, unable to talk or talk very loud. And then, having no hope, of course, there was no cure. Then the only possible end was a very horrible death. That's leprosy. Again, I'm so thankful we don't deal with it anymore. Leprosy was very, very contagious, and because of that, you could stand no closer than 6 feet to anyone. 6 feet. That means someone who's had leprosy for 5 years, for instance, has not hugged his wife, has not hugged his children, not held his children, 5 years. Has not entered his house. He's not allowed to enter his house. And so he lives with other lepers in what they call leper colonies. And in this case, there were 10 who were living together. Leprosy was very common in the Bible, very common in Israel. In fact, Luke actually tells us there were many lepers in Israel during the time of Elisha. And of course, now, even in the New Testament, we read of many cases of leprosy. Very, very common. Sometimes God would actually use leprosy as a discipline. You might remember a captain from Assyria who came to Elisha to be healed. He had leprosy, and God used it as a discipline so that he would come to know God. Uzziah, a king, as he was being disobedient to God, leprosy broke out on his forehead. So God would use this sometimes because people were terrified of leprosy, and rightly so. Now let me walk you through the story now that you know the background. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. Now, if you just take this paragraph and pull out the phrases, you can learn so much about these lepers. In fact, it's one of those paragraphs that you'll just read through to get the story, but sometimes you miss how much is happening. So let me kind of walk you through it. phrase by phrase. I gave you a chart that in the second column there is the verse that you see that phrase. So let me kind of explain this to you. He was met. That means it was intentional. These guys were waiting for Jesus. By the way, people did this all the time. I already mentioned the story of Zacchaeus. When Jesus gets to Jericho, there's so many people waiting for him. You know the story. Zacchaeus has to climb a tree to see him. So it's very common. These guys, even though they're lepers, they're not going to miss the chance. They were expectant. Number two, by 10 lepers, they stayed together. Now, as you know, they had to live in a colony, but this tells me they're unselfish. Have you ever been in a situation where there's a giveaway? You know, a situation where people are giving stuff away, and maybe you're with a few other people, and the other people walk faster and even start to jog because they might run out up there, and I want to get one even if you don't get one kind of thing. You could almost see these guys thinking, well, Jesus might heal one of us or two of us, but 10? And you could see one or two of them sprinting, if they even could, ahead. But no, these guys stayed together. Thirdly, they stood at a distance. They knew the rules. They knew they were not allowed to get close. And so they were very respectful of their condition. And even though Jesus was God, and they knew that, I'm going to show you, they did not get close. Fourthly, they were bold. They lifted up their voices. Now, the way Luke says this, I wonder, as you know, Luke is a doctor, a physician, and I don't know if he's referring to the fact that their voices are weak, and so all of them together had to lift their voices to be heard, or if this is just a phrase he's using, I don't know. But we're going to come back to that thought in a moment. They were unashamed. They weren't afraid to say, help. They used Jesus' name. They called him, first of all, Jesus. Now, that's our way of saying it. In those days, they would have called him Yeshua. So they call him by name. That's probably to get his attention. Yeshua! And then they call him Master. Now, I want to just tell you a little bit about this title, Master. It's a title that's one level up from other words, Master. The Greek here is epistates. I put it in your notes for you so you could see it. It's an unusual word in the sense that in the New Testament, the only people who ever call Jesus Master in this form, I mean, this is the highest form of Master, the only people are the apostles. And you have about 6-8 at least references. This is the only exception. These lepers believe that he is who he claims to be. And they call him the highest form of Master. They asked that he would have mercy on us. They recognized their need. They knew they were dying. They knew they had no hope otherwise. So they were being very realistic here. We know we're headed to death. What we need is mercy. And then Jesus said, go show yourselves to the priests. And the next phrase is, as they went, which means to me that they were guys who followed directions. They were obedient. They didn't pause. They took off right when Jesus said it. I share all that with you to say, these guys did everything correctly, almost everything correctly. I think people have a tendency to read this particular story of the 10 lepers and finish reading it and say, oh, there were 9 bad guys and 1 good guy. No, there were 10 good guys. All of us here as believers relate to these guys. These are the things we do. If somebody comes to you and says, I need to pray for healing, how would I pray? Honestly, just give them this list. These guys knew how to pray properly, how to ask properly. They did everything correctly. They're amazing men, even as lepers. When he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Even with his own personal sorrow before him, Jesus is headed to the cross. He's going to hang on a cross and die the most horrible way in a matter of weeks. Yet he walks along on his way to Jerusalem and he sees needs. He sees people. I don't know about you, but when I'm struggling with something very serious, I'm self-absorbed. I don't see other people. I don't see their needs. But Jesus, He still sees people. He still sees their needs and he responds. He gave them clear and biblical instructions. Go show yourselves to the priest. Why did he say that? Because that's what you do from the Old Testament. If you want to read more about this, it's in Leviticus chapter 14. The whole story of what you do. It's also in Luke 5 where he told other lepers, go and show yourselves to the priest. They were cleansed. I told you earlier, probably my favorite line here, and as they went, they were cleansed. This shows me how simple Jesus could make this, and yet how powerful this moment could be. Some months ago, I guess even longer, I watched an illusionist on television. They advertised it for weeks. This illusionist was going to be on, and he was going to do this particular trick. And it was going to be live, so tune in and watch. And I don't usually do those things, but I did. I thought, I'm going to watch this. This is interesting. So we get to the moment when the show starts, and there's music, and there's drama, and there's lights, and there's announcers, and there's people on stage who are participating, and there's a big stage and a build-up. In just a moment, he's going to do this, and then you'd come to a commercial. After this commercial word, we're going to come back, and he's going to do this. And it just went on and on and on. I was bored to death by the time we got to the trick. I think, isn't that interesting how an illusionist needs all of that to make us think he might have some magic? By the way, this particular illusionist didn't have a magic wand, but he had magic fingers, and he would do this. I say that because this says, and as they went, they were healed. No stage, no cameras, no lights, no music, no magic fingers. As they went, they were cleansed. Only God can do this. Only God. Anybody else needs all kind of extra stuff to make them look like they have some magic. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. All of the lepers were healed. All of them, all 10. One of them responded differently. One of the 10. His thankfulness was extravagant. At least from my way of giving thanks. This guy was extravagant. He saw, first of all, that he was healed. So he's headed off to Jerusalem, to the priests, and he looks and he sees that his white spots are gone. His sores are gone. And he believes instantly. Secondly, he turned back. He's going to go back to Jesus one more time. Now, I don't know if you've thought through this, but where are the priests? The only priests are, they're not down the street or down around the next corner. The only priests are in Jerusalem. These guys have at least a day, maybe a two-day journey, or if they were up north where I showed you the star, they have a 3 or 4 day journey, and then they'll get there and they have a process to show themselves to the priest. That's a day or two or more. And then they have a 2 or 3 or 4 day journey back before they can hug their wives, hug their kids, walk into their house again. Can you imagine how excited you'd be? And you'd want to get to Jerusalem and back as quick as you could. But this guy goes, nope, I'm not going till I thank Jesus. By the way, some of you this week on this Thanksgiving holiday will have friends and family and lots of activity, and you'll say, I'm just too busy. No, you're not. If this guy wasn't, you aren't either. He praised God with a loud voice. I think Dr. Luke tells us that for one reason, right? Probably his larynx has been affected. He probably didn't have a loud voice before this. But when he goes back, he has a loud voice now, which shows that he's been healed in every possible way. And then he fell face first before Jesus. By the way, you only do this before God. Now, you and I say, well, I think others might do it for other reasons. No, not these people. Not in this period of time. In fact, we have a story in Acts. Remember it? Acts chapter 10, a guy by the name of Cornelius thought that Peter had these superpowers, so he fell on his face in front of Simon Peter, and Simon Peter said, "Get up! I'm a man like you. Are you trying to get me in trouble?" I added that last part, but that's what he meant. That's what he meant. I'm a man. You don't fall on your face before men. I don't know if you remember. John fell on his face before an angel in Revelation. The same story. Get up. I'm not God. You only do this in front of God. He knew who he was worshiping. He knew who God was. He knew who Jesus was. And he gave thanks. He not only worshiped, he said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This, you were my only hope. Thank you." And he, a Samaritan, was not one you would expect. He was an outcast. He was someone who you'd never dream would be the one of 10 who would turn around. But he did, which reminds us it doesn't matter who you are. The Lord will welcome you back. Then Jesus answered, "We're not 10 cleansed. Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Jesus asked 3 rhetorical questions. Do you ever think about why Jesus did this? He did this often, and he did it for the crowd. He did it for the apostles. You see, they're going to miss a lot of this. Most of us do. We just miss things unless someone points it out. So Jesus will ask 3 rhetorical questions. Number 1, were not 10 cleansed? You can almost see the apostles. Yeah, that's right. There were 10. Yep, 10. Okay, where are the 9? Again, can you see the crowd? Can you see the apostles? Don't see them. I don't think they're here. One more question. Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Wow. That's the question that kind of cuts to the heart. Would I have been one of the 9? Would I have been so excited that I was cleansed that I forgot to say thanks, which, by the way, happens to many of us too often? Jesus affirmed this former leper. "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Good for you, says Jesus. By the way, this guy got nothing more. He didn't get a bonus healing. The other 9 were also healed. That young lady came running out of the restaurant and hugged me and thanked me. I didn't give her more tip. Maybe should have. Nothing else happened except, I want to tell you something, it made that evening so special to me. It made it a great memory. And by the way, I say that because had this guy by himself never come back to thank Jesus, this miracle probably would not be in the gospel. You see, his returning is what made it so extra special that Luke recorded it. So I ask you, as I close, how will you show your thanks this week? I'm going to give you 2 suggestions. Number 1, I would suggest that you be an intentional giver. Work this week extra hard to be a giver. You and I have received so many blessings. One way to say thanks is to give some of our blessings to others. So be a giver. And we're going to give you a practical way to do that in just a moment. Secondly, and here's my challenge to you. Take some time this week. I know you're going to be busy. It's going to be crazy. But get away by yourself for a few minutes. Go to a private place and get down on your knees and spend some time in worship and thanks. You know why, first of all? Because maybe you haven't caught this already, but you see, you had spiritual leprosy. You had a disease, sin, that was eating away at every part of your body, and it was going to lead you to spiritual death. And if you're a Christian today, you got healed. That would be the first thing to thank him for. But then there's so much else that we have. I just encourage you, go get on your knees and spend some time in worship and thanks. I don't want to ever hear Jesus say about me, "Where are the 9? So don't be one of the nine. Now we are showing you a video this morning to close to give you an opportunity to participate in a ministry that we are part of as a church that really ties in well with how we can give an extravagant thanks.
I first started volunteering about 3 or 4 years ago, and there was an appeal on Facebook that they needed volunteers for Monday evening. So, you know, I started working at that point in time and then just kind of grew into it. A part of our community that we service, our homeless community in Fort Wayne, and they really find a sense of safety there, a sense of community. A lot of people just kind of like to come to Inasmuch, either to get a snack, but I think most importantly, they feel a sense of belonging to something. It's a safe place to come. They know that they'll be treated well, and they also sense that they're not only going to have their physical needs met, but also their spiritual needs met too. We make it a point that if somebody comes in and has a request for food, clothing, a bus pass, whatever they're asking for, we make it a point to pray with them, to take an opportunity to talk with them and pray with them. And I think it's that personal touch that makes Inasmuch Ministries special. It's really kind of a heartbreaking to hear a lot of stories from them. We try to help them as much as we can, and it's kind of a combination of encouraging and at the same time frustrating because you want to help them more than what you're able to. You begin to understand the struggles of what it's like to be homeless. You not only don't have a shelter over your head, but also all your belongings and everything is just exposed and oftentimes taken from you. You know, it's a really troubling situation. What is the ultimate solution? Being relational as opposed to transactional. We want to get to know you. We want to kind of understand your story, where you're coming from. The last thing we want to do is send you away empty-handed. We want to give you something, an encouragement, a free Bible, you know, a little bit of food, and most importantly, a prayer. And just to kind of let you know.